Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
From Nice Guy Productions World Headquarters, overlooking the glamorous San Fernando Valley, I'm Mick Garris, and this is the fun size edition of Postmortem AMA, where you can ask me anything. And asking your questions is none other than producer Joe Russo himself. Producer Joe, how are you?
We're on strike, Mick.
Yeah, we got a theme show today.
Yes, we sure do. The Writers Guild of America is on strike. And that includes you and me.
Big time. Yeah, it does indeed.
So we got lots and lots of questions from our listeners. And I'm sure as we go through them and answer them, we will get a lot of our thoughts out. Because you and I haven't really had a chance to catch up since the strike was called early last year.
It's true. We've been out on the picket lines, both of us. And proudly so. Yes. And Joe, you are a captain, a strike captain for part of our your own very own team segment of the Writers Guild.
Yes, yes. I was assigned about 25 writers or so that it's my job to keep them abreast as to what is happening in the ongoings of the, you know, the guild conflict with the studios, the collective organization, the AMPTP.
This is a big important one. There's more at stake here since probably the time when the guilds were created, and those guilds were responsible for there being residuals. Yes. The Directors Guild, the Writers Guild, the Screen Actors Guild, if they didn't exist because of really, really hard work by these guilds, there would be no residuals, and a lot of people make their living off of the residuals of previous successes that they've had.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a funny tweet that was like, you know, well, you're not a gig economy because you have benefits. And it's like, but we only have benefits because we went on strike. You
know? That's right. That's absolutely right.
Yeah. So, let's get into it, and we can kind of parse through these questions and talk about our experience this week. Cause I think it's been an emotional one.
Definitely.
So let's dive in. John writes, do you feel there is more support across the industry and the general public for the writer strike during this strike than previous strikes? If so, why do you think that is? I think you're better suited to answer this, Mick, than I, because I was not here for the last writer strike.
Well, yeah, I've been through three or four of the writer strikes. I joined in 1986, and then there was a strike shortly thereafter. But I really do feel there is, because there's more at stake this time. In terms of streaming, there's virtually no residuals at all in streaming. They pay your fee, and that's the last money you see from it, no matter how successful it is. So it also affects all of the other categories and the other unions, the guilds, the Writers Guild, Directors Guild, and Screenwriters Guild, or and Actors Guild. The Screen Actors Guild are all affected by what takes place here. The Writers Guild has always been more bold than the other ones and willing to go out for one reason, because so many members of the Writers Guild, such a huge percentage, don't make a living off of writing and they're able to do that. But it's also, there were one of the Screenwriters Guild is what they were called originally when they were formed. But there's so much more at stake with streaming and other things, AI and all of the things that affect, and the size of writers' rooms and the numbers of shows that are created each season for each series, things like that. A lot of things at stake, but primarily, and the one that affects everybody the most, is the streaming issue. And that's very important.
Yeah. One little note, though. The only writers who were able to vote in the strike authorization vote, which allowed our leaders to call the strike, are actually working writers. So not all of the writers who are in the guild and are not currently active were not able to actually participate in that decision.
Right. But so, even actors who are writers who are termed working writers, not all of them necessarily.
Sure. Yeah. But they had to have been employed in the last 6 years. It's not like someone who from 2003 who hasn't worked since, you know, is calling for a strike. You know what I mean?
These are all people who are qualified.
Yeah. And people who have been directly impacted by some of these, things that we're striking against.
Right.
So just a little caveat. No, you know,
thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, no, of course. I just didn't want to, everyone to think there's a bunch of unemployed people in the guilds who wanted a strike. I don't think that's necessarily entirely accurate.
Right.
But
I stand corrected.
Captain Joe.
Captain Joe. He's been producer Joe. He's been Pizza Joe, and now he's Captain Joe.
Currently, I'm Captain Joe. I look forward to when this war is over and I can retire from the front lines, though. But I would say, aside from a couple of Elon Musk-y blue check people on Twitter, telling me to go get a real job and a real career instead of striking, I feel like there is a huge amount of support in the public, and I feel like we're winning the war on social media.
Yeah, well, that's another thing too. There wasn't social media before.
Right.
Social media is having a huge effect in being able to communicate with not just 2 minutes of a news report on the ABC News every night. This is something that's pervasive. There are a lot of creatives who have a very active social media and wide-reaching social media, and they can make their case clearly to a very broad base.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted from the Shrine Auditorium the other night, where they had a big WGA meeting, which I attended. There was about 2,000 writers in attendance, which was a very big pep rally.
to say the least.
But I tweeted from there, and it got millions of views and like 60,000 likes or something. It was crazy. Wow. I had to mute the thread because it was like draining my phone battery on the picket line. But it got picked up in Deadline. It got picked up in the Ankler. It got picked like it, you know.
Well, that's because it was Joe Russo.
That's right. that's right. Don't tell Deadline.
The other Joe Russo.
They put three of my tweets on their site last week. That specific time, Deadline attributed it to me correctly. The Ankler did not.
Yeah, I saw the Deadline attribution.
Yeah. Long story short is, Mick's right. Like our messaging is getting out there, and it's getting out there more clearly than I think it probably has or ever has in years past, which I think is going to be a huge boon in terms of fighting what is likely going to be a very, very long battle.
Yeah. The last one was 100 days, which is a long time. I expect this one to go at least that long. I hope it doesn't.
Well, there's one thing about the support that I wanted to talk about that might actually factor into the timing of the strike. I'm sure you've heard, I know you weren't there, but I'm sure you've heard, the first time ever, my understanding, this is the first time this has ever happened, all of the heads of the labor unions were at this WGA meeting at the Shrine Wednesday night, including DGA and SAG, the Directors Guild and the Screen Actors Guild. they've never officially come out and stood in solidarity like that before with the writers, correct?
Not officially, but individually, a lot of them have.
Yeah.
In the past, 2007, 88, whenever, they definitely came out, but not necessarily officially sanctioned by the heads of the union.
Yeah, it felt historic. It felt like...
Oh, it is. The fact that everyone was at that meeting together is a big deal.
I do feel like if the next 6 weeks, while the Directors Guild and SAG negotiate their contracts, which expire June 30th, mm-hmm. I think we're going to... That timeline could be expanded, like Mick said, or even collapse, depending on how those negotiations proceed. Because I can't see a world where, you know, SAG, DGA, and the WGA all go out on strike on June 30th. I can't see how the studios last very long.
Yeah, you know? If that were to happen, that would be... We've never had the DGA and the Screen Actors Guild go on strike. So if there were that trifecta of craft guilds go out on strike, there, that would be the most crippling thing to the studio's point of view.
Yeah, because they literally, Hollywood would shut down. There would be nothing being made. They would have no content to sell. And if you have no content to sell, your stocks are going to get hammered. So
right.
I think it'll be very, very interesting to see how these next few weeks proceed.
Yeah. Well, let's see what other questions we have about this.
Oh, we have plenty. Don't worry, Mick. Cinedine VR writes, since residuals are a big part of the WGA's asks, I have a question about backend. How many movies do you have net points on, and have you ever been paid any back?
Well, interesting that you ask. I have points in a couple of them. But most of my work has been in television rather than in features. But as a writer and as a director, I've had points. In television, you don't get a back end other than residuals.
Right.
So you don't get a percentage of profits or sales or anything like that. So in my entire career, the amount I've gotten back from my points is zero.
Wow.
Over my entire career.
Wow. My much shorter career. I've had back end on all of my movies so far too, with the exception of maybe one or two of them. And I have yet to see a single dollar of net back end profit either.
Yeah. You learn not to expect it, because creative Hollywood financing is a fact of life, and it's been so since the beginning. You know, if you can't hide it, even on movies that have made hundreds of millions of dollars in profit, they're able to hide it through marketing costs and various shell games that they play. But if you want to work again with James Cameron or with James Wan or with anybody who is a proven moneymaker or the actors, then first of all, the big time guys get their percentages of the gross rather than of the net.
Yes. Huge difference.
Huge difference, because you can hide all of the profits and show no net profits.
Right.
But if your points are on the gross, that's a different thing. And that's what the big name people do. But the studios know that big names mean big box office. If you're talking about Tom Cruise, you better pay him his percentages, or he goes to another studio.
Yeah. And I mean, this is why the guild fighting for residuals in the past and fighting for streaming residuals now is so important, because residuals is actual money that you see from these movies' revenues, right? I mean, Mick, you've seen that is where you see your quote unquote back end, is through your residual payments.
Yeah. Yeah. And in television, the first time something reruns, you get paid 50% of what you got paid for the original run. And then it goes in half every time you go down. So there are literally residual checks that I get that are in have no dollars just since. It costs
But those first several payments that you got on them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Those are the things that help try that float a writer during the leaner times while they're looking for the next job.
Because a lot of writers don't get a big portion of their pay unless and until a movie gets made or a TV show gets made.
Right.
There's the production bonus, which is often equal to or exceeding your original paycheck for the writing of the script.
Yeah. So, and while you're chasing pitches and open writing assignments and open directing assignments, the idea is these residual monies are supposed to help keep you afloat while you do that, so you can support a professional career. And with streamers cutting the residual stream out, it's made it almost impossible for people to keep doing that.
Yeah, because now most people consume their media through streaming. And once you're paid, that's the end of it.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Okay. Woody Woodpickle.
Oh, he's back.
He's back. Woody Woodpickle asks, I thought WGA writers were supposed to be paid for their work. Why are there so many claiming they're doing free work when they shouldn't be? And what kind of free work are they doing?
Well, they shouldn't be. If you're working for a guild signatory and all of the studios are guild signatories, then they are obligated to pay you for the development. Right. A lot of people only want to see something after you've worked out a pitch or written a script on your own. If you are doing actual screenwriting for a guild signatory and they're not paying you, then you and the signatory are both breaking very crucial and fundamental rules established by the Writers Guild.
Yeah. But the problem is it's become a very common practice for producers to basically play gatekeepers for the studios. They prevent drafts from reaching the studio execs so that you can't get your delivery payments until you do the quote unquote producer's pass. And
that's
all of their notes. And so what you're seeing people complaining about are these producers who are supposed to be our partners in this, and they want, you know, they want to get the movie made too, because that's when they get paid. They want to make sure they're putting what they believe is the best version of the draft in front of the studio so that they can get a green light. But in doing that, they're preventing writers from getting paid, and they're stretching out the timetable that the writers are working on these drafts to the point where it's crunching the money down almost to nothing.
Which, again, is not right and not part of the MBA set out by the Writers Guild. I mean, producers often are signatories as well to be able to develop the script, and they are breaking the rules by doing that. And for them to ask for multiple drafts to do a producer's draft is really wrong. But I understand if you're somebody trying to make your living and trying to make it into the world of filmmaking, you're going to be taken advantage of by some unscrupulous producers. And I mean, I know it's a shock to hear that there are unscrupulous producers in Hollywood, but it turns out that it's a fact of life. And the best you can do is hope to work with ethical producers.
Yeah.
And
But it's not even just the producers. Sometimes it's the execs playing games with the producers too. I mean, let's not absolve the studios and the streamers in this situation.
Yeah, well, if it's the execs, if it's the studios, the networks, or the streamers, then they are infringing upon the rules laid out by the Writers Guild MBA.
Totally. I mean, you know, there was a project we had go into production that was set up at a streamer level studio, and we turned our rewrite into the producer. And because we turned it into the producer, when the studio came back and asked for more notes, they said, well, you guys never officially turned it into the studio. Like, you have to go back and do these additional notes, because technically you never completed your draft.
Yeah, you only get paid when the draft is turned into the studio.
Which was not cool, because they basically got a second draft for free. You know,
right. And they don't care.
They don't care. No, they don't care. And of course, you know, it fell on us to not be the greedy writers, because come on, you just got to do this, and then we're going into production, you know?
Yeah, so, we're all on the same team.
Yeah, here, right? No, I know.
You're a team player, right?
It was very gross when Carol Lombardini at the AMPTP this week called free work collaboration. Yeah. But the problem is, if one side of the table is getting paid to collaborate and the other side is not, that's called exploitation, not collaboration.
Yeah. Yes, they get a check every week.
Yep.
And
you better believe it.
Then they decide when they give us the checks and make up all the rules. Well, that's the whole purpose of the Writers Guild. And I've got to tell you, I've been doing a lot of work with the Guild who've been very helpful on various issues. Right now, I'm having hocus pocus issues that I'm not afraid to say. And the Writers Guild is really coming to bat for us, me and David Kirshner, who created the whole thing.
That's great.
I love my guild and I feel indebted to them, and every working writer should be, because you wouldn't have the benefits you have if some really hardworking writers didn't give up a lot to create this Screenwriters Guild.
The guild staff is pretty incredible.
They're amazing. They're legal, they're lawyers and all.
The fact that we were able to call a strike at 9 p.m. on a Monday night and have thousands of writers in the picket line by Tuesday morning. I mean, it's an incredibly well-oiled machine.
Solidarity.
All right. Adam asks, what do you think is the main issue with paying writers what they deserve? And must WGA writers absolutely cease writing, or can they still write stuff at home? They just can't turn pages in. It's kind of two questions. Let's take the first one first.
Yeah, well, it's streaming is the main issue, and the residuals that go along with that. There are other things too. There, like I said earlier, the size of the writer's room in series television, and AI issues. And I know we're going to get to that later. Yeah. But it's primarily the streaming issue.
Yeah, I think the problem is the way the studios are primarily incentivized is through stock, and their stocks are only ever go up with constant growth. And, you know, obviously company expansion is a good way to show that growth. And the other way is to cut costs and trying to basically limit writers and find ways to undercut us. They see that as a way to save money and grow their stock prices. Right. The problem is, we create the content for them, and without us, there is no content. And so that's basically what the strike is about, is choking the pipeline down to nothing so that their stocks take a hit and they go, oh shit, we have the best way back to growth is to give the writers what they want.
Just a fair share. We're not asking for a lot at all.
No, we're not. We're asking for less than 2% of their profits. And just to put it in context too, there was a great image that went around last week of the salaries the CEOs at some of the biggest entertainment companies paid themselves in bonuses. I don't know if you saw it, Mick, but
oh, I did. Yeah,
it was eight men. If you add up all the money that they paid themselves, it's almost double what the Writers Guild is asking for.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. But I want to make it clear, too, that it's not just a self-centered issue about the entertainment industry. You know, everybody, the corporate heads of every industry are greedy.
It's why
they're there. And the exploitation of workers is tremendous in all industries. And the fight against there being unions and guilds has been going on for quite a while. And it's a struggle because most people get their work, their insurance through their jobs,
right?
And any benefits like that. And that's the sort of thing we're talking about here. It's just the profit issue is so completely out of whack in all industries, but this is the one we're working within, and this is the one we can speak about.
And I do think if we're
but it is solidarity across the board with workers everywhere.
Yeah, Yes, I agree. So the second piece of this question, must WGA writers absolutely cease writing, or can they work on stuff at home? They just can't turn pages in.
Well, that's really up to the writer. You know, if you want to do homework on your own, assuming that the strike will end at a certain point, which of course it has to one way or another, it's up to your conscience. If you're working on something that's important to you, that's your baby, that you want to work on, that's up to you. And I wouldn't say, you know, I wouldn't think negatively of anybody who did that. But as far as turning something in, I mean, that's something entirely different. And of course, you can't turn in any work.
No.
And anyone who asks for a peek at what you're doing, no, slap that wrist.
Yeah. No, you're allowed to write on spec for yourself during this time, but you're not allowed to even turn that material over even to your agents. The idea is we want to completely shut down the pipeline so that we can hopefully make this strike go as fast as humanly possible and resolve as quickly as possible. So yeah, you can write on your own, but you know, the other thing is we're also supposed to be out on the picket line. We're supposed to be showing them that we're not writing. And I, you know, I don't know how you felt getting home after picketing, Mick, but I was tired. Yes,
definitely. Yeah.
I didn't necessarily want to write. So
good for the heart.
Yeah, good. Yeah, exactly. I feel like if I keep this up, I'll be in great shape by the end of the summer. but kind of along those lines, Demir wants to know, what can a non-union writer do during a strike, and what is considered scabbing? I know you have some experience with this, Mick.
Yeah,
not as a scab, but being scabbed on.
Yes. Well, scabbing is writing for a guild signatory without having a guild agreement. None of the studios are really allowed to do that. And I know there's another question coming up that addresses this more specifically, my experience with Fear itself. But one of the things we did, and we may as well tackle it here, is that when Lionsgate bought Masters of Horror, they asked double the price that Anchor Bay was getting from Showtime. Showtime passed, and they decided to sell it to NBC. And so I came up with a new title, Fear Itself, but I wasn't going to be involved because it was for network TV, and the whole idea of Masters of Horror was no censorship and no advertising and none of that input, no standards and practices. So I was talked into doing the show regardless of those limitations by directors who had worked on Masters of Horror. So I agreed to do it, and we went forward, and there was an imminent strike. We got a first draft written of all 13 episodes before the strike hit, and that year it was on Halloween Day. So all of them were done before then. Well, there were other notes that had to be addressed, which is the normal round of events that takes place in writing any project. So we had 13 first drafts all done, and they hired non-union Canadian writers to come in and do all the work from then. And I was asked by people who were my managers as well as co-executive producers on the project to produce. And I said, I cannot take notes and have non-union writers writing this under my overseeing.
Yeah.
And have that. I can't do it in good conscience or in terms of the guild. So basically, my show that I created was stolen and ruined. It turned out to not be a successful show at all. There are a couple of good episodes, but it failed miserably on NBC. And it was, you know, the writing was subpar.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't bring in the writers I'd worked with so well for these first 13 drafts. And it was heartbreaking. But those people who came and wrote on the show, they were scabs. So, you know, good luck getting a guild job after that.
Well, yeah. So it's a great anecdote because how many of those writers of those episodes of Fear Itself that scabbed are your favorite writers now?
I never met any of them. I left the show.
No, I wasn't. I mean, it was.
I know it was a rhetorical question, yes. But just to make that clear, that I left that show and I never met those writers. Yeah. And they continued without me. So that there was no real showrunner on other than managers.
It did not launch their careers to do that. In fact, it probably hurt their careers in the long term for that short term gain.
I would guess so, although I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, we'd have to probably do some research, but I can tell you right now off the top of my head, I can't think of a single scab writer from 07, 08 who is a household writing name these days.
I'm sure that's true.
But the point being, the Writers Guild has a rule in place that if you do scab and if you are caught scabbing, you will not be a member of the Writers Guild of America.
Period.
And as someone who has written non-union movies and joined the guild and then written union movies, I would never want to go back to non-union movies.
Right.
So the idea of losing the Writers Guild benefits forever just to get one thing going right now makes, to me, zero sense. I know there's a lot of writers out there on social media who are like, oh, this is my moment, you know.
Yeah.
It is not. We are effectively fighting for you and in the hopes that you join the guild in the future.
Right.
You're going to want these things that we're trying to get.
Yep. And it also must be said that there's a really important place for independent non-union movies. You know, they don't have the budgets to oversee and pay residuals and do everything above board. You know, Roger Corman, for decades upon decades, has been making movies not under guild rules, but also launching careers. You know, he's been a stepping stone to some of the greatest filmmakers America has ever known.
Absolutely.
And the world of independent film is a really crucial part of movies. And, you know, to not have to be a guild writer or director or actor, it's different in that world, but hopefully you get to the point where you do enjoy the benefits of guild membership as your career progresses.
Yeah. So I think as a rule of thumb, if you think you are, or your situation is the exception to the rule that you might not get in trouble with the guild, I would err on the side of caution. Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, whatever you're trying to make or you're talking to someone about making, during a strike will ultimately end up at one of these companies that is struck for distribution purposes, and I wouldn't want to be crossing that picket line,
this is certainly our most inside Hollywood episode we've ever done.
Absolutely. But you know, I've gotten a lot of questions from our listeners about this.
Great.
I think we you know, just put it out clearly, like that's what I'm telling people. You know, if you can stand in solidarity with the Writers Guild during this time, it's about choking out the pipeline, and everyone should be doing it, especially if you would like to be a member of the Writers Guild down the road.
Yeah.
So, all right. Man of Horror asks, and we touched on this a little bit with your answer in the last question, but you know, it seems showrunners are once again facing the challenge you face with Fear Itself. Man of Horror asks, what are your thoughts on Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery trying to force showrunners to perform producing services and possibly facing fines in doing so?
Well, I think it's unconscionable. They know the rules. They're supposed to operate under the rules as well as the writers are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the rules are you can't write during a strike.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, and like I said, I was asked to do producing, which meant giving notes to people to do the writing.
Right.
And that's the same thing.
And that's the guild's philosophy this time around, is writing is done at every step of the process from conception through post-production.
Right.
And even you just giving notes on, you know, like that is writing. That's writing.
Yeah. In 2007, it would have been acceptable. But it wasn't acceptable to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the right position. That's the guild's position now.
Yeah.
And they had a big showrunners meeting. As of this recording, it was yesterday. And they've essentially asked all showrunners to stop working completely. To shut
because
it down.
A showrunner's main job is the writing. And overseeing the writing and exactly. Writing themselves, doing the rewrites from other writers' work and all of that stuff. So their main job is writing. So if they're being forced to work, it's writer's work.
Yeah. And probably one of the biggest blows to one of the biggest offenders that the guild is fighting against right now, Netflix. The Duffer brothers, who created Stranger Things, said they will not move forward with production on the final season until this is resolved, which,
great.
You know what? That's huge. I really, really commend them for doing that because those kids aren't getting any younger. but, you know, that's Netflix's biggest cash cow. And to deprive them of that, you know, I think next week they're going to see that reflected in their stocks. You know, and that's what we have to do. That's what we have to do to win the fight. So, all right. Carl writes, and this is the big one. I read in the Hollywood Reporter an interview with the Writers Guild of America where they said the companies were unwilling to even open a conversation about artificial intelligence. Do you think there's a potential that the studios will try to replace writers with AI?
If they do, it will be incredibly stupid. Because what you feed into AI is what you get out of it.
Yep.
And what you don't have is the spark of creativity that comes from the human mind. That great artists are great artists because they're unique and individual and capable of thoughts that not everyone has or creations that they have. AI can be taught that stuff, but it's a regurgitation of what has come before and what has been fed into it. Eventually, I'm sure its own self-learning process will allow it to seem creative, but it will never be as human as what the stories we tell are. You know, the center of any story that engages is its humanity. Right. And to do creative, original things, you're not going to get AI to create everything everywhere all at once. I guarantee you. And I think humanity is capable of a creativity that is ethereal. And, you know, your ones and zeros that make up everything that goes into AI, chat, GPT, whatever, is going to come out masticated and the same.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, ChatGPT, it's at a very nascent stage right now. You know, I think I've told you off mic, but I don't know if I remember said it on the show. I asked it to help me write a scene with a monster recently, just to see what it would give me. You know, and it basically had the monster chase them around the house. The characters ran outside, found some police officers who they sent into the house to arrest the monster.
Great idea! I wouldn't have thought of that.
So you know, it's definitely not in a place where it's very usable yet. And I think that honestly is why the guild is in a place where we can force the studios to make some kind of compromise on this. Because, yeah, I think, you know, in their never-ending quest to raise their stocks by cutting costs, they see artificial intelligence as a way to weed out expensive human writers. The problem is the technology is not there yet.
I truly believe that everybody wants to make the best movies possible. Yes, there are businessmen running the studios who want the bottom line, but I think they want their movies to be good. And I don't think they're looking to fuck over all of the writers. You know, but they are taking positions that benefit themselves in ways that exclude the writers.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think everybody running the studios is evil.
I think that's true. I think a lot of the execs we interface with on the development side, I agree with you. They want to make good movies. I think the people we're talking about are more on the business affairs side, the legal side, you know, they're the ones who see this and salivate over the fact that, you know,
we can cut something out.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, there's a lot of problems with AI, not just the fact that it's not ready yet. Even if the studios would love it to be in the next few months so that they can bring us to our knees, but it's not going to be. And I agree with Mick, in the long term, I don't think it ever will be, for all the reasons Mick spoke about. You know, the more AI movies you make, the more AI will start drawing from AI written movies, and it will create a negative feedback loop that will create a very bad product and ultimately will kill the golden goose that is the movie industry.
Yeah. If you think franchises are bad now, just wait.
Yeah. No, I mean, right now we're just dealing with executives trying to put their weight on human writers. Imagine what happens when executives are dealing with a robot that cannot articulate human emotions. I think it's overall, it's a negative. I think the timing of this fight is the right time. Because if the Guild can win this fight against the biggest companies of the world and set a precedent for how to use artificial intelligence, it could have rippling effects across every industry in the world forever. So solidarity.
Here, solidarity. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of the future, one final question, Mick. Travolta Russell Jedi Trekkie asks, in the wake of the writer's strike, where do you see streaming 5 years from now?
Well, I think I see it where it is now, but only amplified. It is where most people receive their entertainment.
Yeah.
I think the broadcast networks will continue to diminish in their importance. It'll always be there because of the access of an antenna, not paying for it, that it's free over the air and the like. But streaming, internet connections cost less than ever before. There's so much competition between 5G and Wi-Fi and all of these things that make it more and more affordable. I think there's going to be a lot of consolidation, because how many streaming networks can you subscribe to?
Right.
You know, Hulu and Disney and Netflix and BritBox and all of them. There's so many of them. Criterion Channel, all of that. Although I think that's been subsumed into Max these days. But there's just so many. There'll be consolidation, but it will be the primary way that people get their entertainment, and including overwhelming theatrical.
Yeah, I think cable subscriptions are going to continue to go down. Streaming subscriptions are going to go up. There'll be a lot of musical chairs, like Mick said. But yeah, I mean, streaming isn't going away anytime soon. I think the fire hose of content we saw during the pandemic will go away. I think it'll be a more modest amount of content coming through the pipelines. You know, it's going to be a cornerstone of our business moving forward, which is why before any of these bad habits that streaming has created with business affairs practices calcifies any further, this strike will hopefully fix some of those things and make it so it is a fair and lucrative business for the studios moving forward, and for the people who make the content.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is the most crucial strike that the WGA has participated in since its formation.
Yeah, I agree. So if you're in town, if you're in LA and you want to go check out a picket line and walk in solidarity with the writers, we'll be there all week.
You know, at least.
If probably all summer.
Well, we'll see.
Mondays to Fridays outside of all the major studios. You know, there's other ways. You know, if you can't be local, there's other ways to support. You know, keep fighting online, keep complaining to the studios that they need to make a deal. You know,
It's not that the guild is greedy. It's just looking for even a modicum of fairness. And it's really important. And I know that a lot of people think this is a very niche issue, and it is in some ways, but it's also representative of what's going on in industries throughout the country with union, non-union, all these issues that come up that affect everybody. So I know those of you who are listening are particularly interested in the way that the film business works. Many of you work within the industry, and we really appreciate your support, and just listening to the issues, I think, is important. And we'll
get back to our regularly scheduled AMAs next time. And we'll keep you abreast on how things are going, but we'll get back to the which Stephen King books would Mick like to adapt next time.
All right, thank you, Producer Joe, and thank you everybody out there. And we'd love to get your comments at askmickanything@gmail.com. And please, if you're enjoying the show, rate and review us at Apple Podcasts. It really helps a lot. It's very important to us. And one last thing, I am so excited that this week we won the prestigious Rondo Award for the best podcast out there. And thank you so much for your votes. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. And we really appreciate it and look forward to more.
Yeah, it was a big win for the whole team, and we couldn't be more grateful to our fans for helping make Postmortem the podcast of the year.
Yeah, there we go. So thank you, Joe. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Mick.
Thank you for listening to Postmortem with Mick Garris. Download new episodes every Wednesday or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Postmortem with Mick Garris is produced by Mick Garris and Joe Russo. Our sound engineer is Christopher Leon Price. Our announcer is Jeff Gelb. Our graphic designer is John Holland. And our theme was composed and performed by Bill Burney with additional music by John Jasensky. If you're enjoying our show, please take a moment to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.